Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, it's Zoe, and my guest today is Heidi Alexandra Pollard. Very interesting woman. I'm very excited to interview her. She calls herself a workplace humanist facilitator and interviewer who helps people and companies discover and amplify their unique power. She is a 7 times author, like 7 books. that's a huge amount. I'm curious about that. And her latest one is called It All Starts With UQ Power. And her message is to spread the message that people's unique personal strengths are the key to unlocking their potential. So the unique bits of you are where your potential sits. She is a podcast interviewer herself, so, you know, no pressure on me interviewing a podcast interviewer. And her podcast is called The Theater of You, and she's had some great people on that podcast. It's a really fun little podcast. And she has a unique deck of question cards. We might actually talk about that at some point during the interview today, too, which helps us dive in deeply into what makes people tick, their passions, and their purpose. So she does amazing stuff. She believes in the goodness of people. So do I. I believe people are fundamentally good. She teaches body language and the power of human-to-human connection. And she works to transform companies and cultures to attract brilliant talent, create sustainable growth through building a great culture. And she wants to get rid of the term human resources. I know, what is that? Who thought that up? It's just terrible jargon. Yeah. She is the co-founder of Human Power, and this is based on the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and a founding board member of the Got Your Back Sista charity. Outside of work, she is an avid reader, property investor, motorcyclist, vegetarian. Somehow those two things don't seem to go so well together, but I'm curious about that. Lover of style, minimalism, and tiny houses, and walking in nature with doggies. There you go. She believes that the best measure of your success is how you use your unique human power to touch the lives of others. So welcome, Heidi.
Thank you so much, Zoe. Wow, that feels like my whole life history just got shared.
Yeah, that's right. You. Everybody knows everything about you now. You're a vegetarian, you ride motorbikes, you have dogs, and you want to live in a tiny house.
Yeah, that's pretty well it in a nutshell.
What it doesn't say, though, is where I've read across your website and elsewhere is the fact that you threw it all in. You threw in the big corporate life to go out and strike a path on your own. And you talk about these corporate refugees. So I want to hear a little bit about that, a little bit more of your backstory about what it is and what happened that made you throw in corporate and strike out on your own and discover this whole passion you have around unique power. So tell us about that.
Yeah, thank you. I was a corporate, as I said, and I actually quite enjoyed working in corporate, and I had a great career in both corporate and in government. And primarily I started because my undergraduate and postgraduate degrees were in organizational communication. And so I did a lot in the communication space, organizational development and change and HR and spaces like that. And I really loved what I did, and I loved building and growing my teams and seeing human potential grow. What I found I got frustrated with was, despite the fact that maybe I could control or create a positive environment in my own team, I was struggling with often the bigger behemoths that I was part of. So I might have a team of 70, we could create safety and a great culture in that team. But if we were in a larger organization, and I've been in organizations with 9,500 staff, for example, and in government where there's political agendas and ministers and people at the top, I found it really frustrating that often we were being set up for failure, and that the cultures could get quite toxic and controlling. And like we were talking, or you mentioned before, human resources. So seeing people as widgets and numbers on a timesheet to get an objective, and not necessarily seeing people as the humans that they are and as people, and that each person has unique strengths and abilities and ways that they learn and grow and can contribute. So after getting quite frustrated with that, I ended up hiring a coach for myself because I thought, oh, maybe someone can help me get a different perspective on this, or I can grow through that as a leader. And within about two sessions, I was hooked and went, how can I do what you're doing? I really like what you're doing on the other side of the table. And so I explored a bit of coaching. I went and interviewed a whole heap of coaches to find out how did they get to be what they were doing? Was that a sustainable kind of career? You know, how did they debrief? Did they get burnt out? Were they part of a franchise? Did they start on their own? So I did quite a bit of investigation, shall we say, because I was in a, you know, a really good position in corporate and, you know, had an excellent remuneration and a big team and lots of responsibility. But more and more I found it was a bit Groundhog Day-ish and I wanted to have a bigger impact. And I knew that I could only ever kind of go to the edges or the boundaries of the teams that I was in. And so after a while, I decided to get some coach training and I went and did my study to become a coach. And it took me three times, actually. I had three attempts before I actually left corporate. And I think that was a number of things. It was, you know, leaving security obviously was a bit scary. Leaving my team was a big thing. So I felt like I was going to leave them high and dry if I left. And I'd so nurtured and developed my team. You know, they felt like my little understudies and, you know, are amazing people in their own right. But I kind of felt this sense of responsibility for them. And we were in an organization that was going through quite some challenges, so much so they were having ICAC investigations. So I felt responsible in trying to control and keep these people safe that, you know, I loved and cared for. But also leaving a known brand and leaving a big company where I found I could get meetings with anyone anywhere because of my title and being a director at a large firm and that opened doors. And I thought, well, when I'm just me and just Heidi, will anyone pick up the phone and answer me? Will anyone open their door? So that was a little bit scary. I was fortunate that I'd been a property investor since my early 20s. So I had enough financial security that I knew leaving a salary, you know, I'd have to make that up pretty quickly, but also that if I really got in dire straits, I had backup. So it, you know, it was a whole range of things, but I just knew it was time. And as I said, it took me three times and I actually had to get my coach to help me get over the getting out of there. And I ended up writing my resignation letter. I wrote a speech to give to my staff and I did all of my filing and everything so that everything was set up so that I really couldn't back out in the end. Uh-huh. And so that's when I eventually left. Yeah.
Wow. So I have, when you tried to leave three times, does that mean that you resigned and then went back or you are about to resign and then you pulled away?
Yeah, I had the conversation with my CEO three times.
Oh,
so last time I left. So the first time they were like, you can't, and we're in the middle of this big change thing. And so they offered me a bigger project and some more influence. So I stayed. About 3 or 4 months later, I was like, no, I really think. And then they offered me something else and some more money and, you know, and so I stayed and felt responsible. Oh, sorry. Hang on. Do you mind if I just get them out of the door?
Yeah, that's fine. We thought we might have some dog interaction. I was just telling Heidi before the interview that I've got chickens outside as well. So we might have a whole farmyard action happening. So the dog.
That's called live action. My apologies. I think the mailman just delivered something to the office door.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. Yeah, so I did actually essentially resign three times, had the conversation. Yeah.
Oh, that's so painful. So I love your story in the fact that you did all your research, you had all this financial backing, you did all the things that a good person does, a sensible person does, and exactly what I did not do for myself. I went through the whole same process of striking out on my own. I had no financial backing, didn't do any research, and just had to go. And it was a
wow.
It was a longer road, that's for sure, I can assure you. And so what I love about your story is basically you're living your own message, like this whole idea that I need to be self-expressed, I need to go out and stand on my own and my own strength, and the courage that takes, you know, three attempts to get out the door is quite remarkable. So this whole idea of UQ, tell me a little bit about that. So what does your book talk about, and what are you hoping the readers will get from it?
Oh, cool. Yeah, thanks for asking. So UQ stands for your uniqueness quotient. So it's a bit like in life we often hear about IQ and EQ and that they're very important things, I guess, for career and life success. And I've heard some interesting research recently that says as your IQ goes up, your EQ usually goes down, and that you have to then learn and develop those skills. So often you'll find super smart professors and people that are not so good at the human interpersonal skills. But UQ is this sort of other component to that, and that's that what makes you unique and what is your unique strengths and innate power. Those things, those ingredients are the things that really are what's going to give you flow. So often we get caught in fight or flight. And what I want people to do, whether that's in business, in their career or in their life, is find flow. And flow is where our strengths are. Flow is where things come naturally, where I love what I'm doing, where I do it even if I didn't get paid, and where I feel totally comfortable. So the book talks all about how to get to that point, how to find your unique strengths, how to find flow, what are some of the ways that you can influence that and you can, I guess, boost your power. And the latest book that I'm writing at the moment is actually a bit tongue-in-cheek. It's called Up Yourself. And it's all about your unique power, up, but it's really about this need to be more up ourselves. And I don't know about you.
I love that expression. it cracks me up a lot. And for my non-Australian listeners, up yourself means, Australian translation means, you know, arrogant. So I love you're just playing around with that unique power of yourself. Okay, keep going. Just a little distraction there.
So a lot of people see up, if you're up yourself, that's a derogatory term, that, you know, you're full of yourself, you think you're great. Mm-hmm. And in actual fact, I think we should be up ourselves. We should go, I know exactly what my unique powers and strengths are, and I'm really comfortable with developing those, and I can contribute better when I'm in that space. And when I partner with other people and their unique powers, that's where we create greatness. So too often I see in corporates and organizations that we try and pigeonhole people or push them into a mold. And so we're trying to make people well-rounded when in fact we should be allowing them to be a superstar and keep the pointy tips of their star. Teams should be well-rounded, and that's where we should be going, okay, you're a star at this and you're a star at that, and let's bring those stars together and form a well-rounded team. But we shouldn't be blunting off the ends of our children, of our employees, of our friends. We should be going, you know what, you radiate when you're talking about this or when you're doing that. So let's do that, because that's the stuff that juices us up. And that's what gives us energy. So I think we should be, you know, really up ourselves a hell of a lot more. And I don't know about other viewers and people you have, but here in Australia in particular, we have quite an epidemic. We have a confidence crisis, and we just have so much tall poppy syndrome that as soon as someone stands in their power and starts to go and grow, other people start going, hang on a minute, you know, back in your box, who do you think you are? Mm. And I just think we should start going, hell yeah, high five to you. And, you know, what makes you unique is different to me. And isn't that fantastic? That's our humanity. That's our humanness. So I'm all about really upping yourself and getting in that space.
Heidi, I think you're channeling your inner Canadian. That's what that's all about. Well, and Canadians would say that's your inner American, because the Americans are probably the poster children for being up themselves and that sort of like, woohoo, I can do it. I'm the best. And I think the Americans actually model this well culturally, is that the celebration of the individual is pretty much a significant cultural meme that is woven through the fabric of everything that they do. Now, some of it's good, some of it ain't so good. And I think it's interesting that there's an Australian pull to bring up some of that. And I agree with you about the confidence crisis and the tall poppy syndrome. In fact, I was talking about this last week on my podcast, how that is certainly a challenge for folks, especially if they need to speak up for themselves. So I'm curious about this now. So we have this as a block, as a boundary, as a border for us, as a culture in Australia, about don't stick up for yourself, don't speak up, don't be a rising star, don't be a shining light. How do you encourage people to get over that?
Yeah, great question. I think that's a challenge, right, where the common vernacular and the actual culture of a country is that, you know, we're working class people. And I think it actually goes back to our roots, and I'm not talking about our native Australians, the Aboriginals. I'm talking about when Western culture came here and British settled. Is a lot of people that came here were convicts, essentially. And I know I'm the descendant of someone that stole a loaf of bread. And so it's often why we end up here. And people are still got their tin cup and thinking, you know, I'm working class and that's where we come from, and not to forget our roots. And you're right, the Americans are quite poster children. And I've been involved in a number of international masterminds that saw me traveling to the US a lot and seeing the different cultures together. I loved that about the Americans, that they were pretty confident and they were like, I've got a business idea and it's this and I'm going for it. Whereas here in Australia, we'd be like, I'm not so sure. And maybe I should, or maybe I shouldn't. And, you know, everyone's telling me this. And so that self-confidence and self-belief is something that's not typically here. So I actually think it's time that we start changing the conversation. And yes, I agree. I think that's difficult. And you need to start thinking about who's around me. So I'm a firm believer in the good old Jim Rowan quote of the five people you spend the most time with is who you'll become the sum total of. And so I often say to people, well, can you kind of find your fabulous five? So I call them your fab five. Who are five people that you can have surrounding you? Maybe one that's really good for your health and well-being, one that's good that boosts your growth and makes you be a better person. You know, another one that maybe is just a good person and a listening ear. People who are your cheering squad who want to see you rise. And the more we do that for ourselves, and that's why I call it up yourself, no one else can do it for you, but the more we can seek out that support group and find our tribe and the people who believe in us, the water level rises for all of us. So sometimes it's who you're hanging out with, sometimes it is the culture of the workplace, but you've got to start going, how do I start leaning into this? And it's not about being arrogant. It's not about putting it over someone else. It's just about coming back to having some confidence in yourself. And I recently had the pleasure of sponsoring an event with Amy Cuddy, who's the power posing woman from Columbia and Harvard University. And that's what that was all about, was standing in your power and having some presence and helping your body trick your mind into believing that I'm okay. And I think the more we can create safety in workplace cultures, and by safety, I don't mean workplace safety, I mean psychologically safe, that, you know what, it's okay to own your strengths. It's okay to encourage each other. The more we can have strengths-based learning in schools, the more our, you know, population will start to go, it's okay to own what you're good at. And again, to quote an analogy, the idea of a candlelight, you know, the more brightly we shine, the more light we share on others. And that a candle, when it lights another person, it doesn't diminish itself at all. And yet too often we see people snubbing each other out and putting out each other's lights. And that doesn't help anyone. It just puts more darkness in the world. So, you know, I think social media, selfies, Facebook, all of those things can really make that difficult for people, because we do comparison shopping. We look at other people's profiles and we do comparison. The more we're comfortable in who we are, our history, our values, our purpose, the more comfortable we are with that, the less likely we are to even try and compare or worry about what other people are doing. And not for it to be a selfish thing, but it's actually a self-full thing. So, you know, I don't want people to be selfish. I want them to be self-full. And when our cup's full, we can share that with others. You know, we're abundant. We can flow over. And so people who tend to be have more unique power, they tend to actually be great leaders. They tend to be people who encourage others to do the same. And so I think we need to get to a tipping point and kind of flick the human power switch and start going, they're not human resources, they're actually people. And their power comes when their strengths are switched on. So for me, if you're a leader or an owner of a company or an organization, or maybe a teacher or just a family member, start asking questions, find out what your people's strengths are, ask them, you know, and the more we explore that and then give them space and places to use those strengths, the better we all can have a fulfilled, happy life.
So I'm curious about one part of your conversation, and I love that you talk about self-full. I think we must be channeling a similar brain, because I wrote about that this week as well, about being self-full.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That's because you're all about connection. So there's connectivity there.
Right. We are channeling the universe is talking about the self-full principle. It's one thing that I've followed and believed in ever since I became a coach. Even our stories are similar, you know, like I hired a coach and I've had this exact same experience, you know, it's like, I want what they're having. I want to do what they're doing because I've had such fundamental shifts myself. I want to offer that to the world too.
Wow.
But in any case, that wasn't the question. The question I have is back to safety in the workplace, psychological safety in the workplace. And you've talked a little bit about that, you know, encouraging people to find their unique strengths and work to that. And that helps people find their power. What else do you think needs to be in place to develop safety, like psychological safety in the workplace? What would you suggest to clients when you're talking to them about that?
So, great question. And what I find in organizations is when we can start being above the line, that is, and it's actually a beautiful, I guess, model that was developed by a guy by the name of Brad Sugars, sorry. He's an Australian that now lives in Las Vegas. And he said when people are above the line, they have an oar and they're kind of rowing their own boat. So oar stands for ownership, accountability and responsibility. If they're not and they're playing victim, then they have a bed and they lie in it. So that's blame, excuses, denial. And what happens is, when we have a culture where there's a lot of blame going on, where either staff or leaders feel the need to make excuses, where we're denying the truth and we're often not having conversations. So I'm a firm believer in courageous conversations. And I do believe that a culture is really just an extension of the conversations that go on. So you can always tell a culture by listening to their conversations. And so if the conversations are all around, I didn't do that, no one told me, I didn't get the email about that, that wasn't my fault, you know, I didn't know the budget, when they're in that excuses or, you know, it was IT's fault, that schedule didn't work. When we're in that blame, excuses and denial, then the culture is unsafe. People don't feel safe to speak up. They don't feel safe to take a day off. They're concerned that they might get replaced. They're worried about their job. They think, is someone going to stab me in the back? And I'll work with coaches that say, oh, we've got great trust here. And I'm like, really? It's interesting. I've noticed several emails where people are copying in 20 or 30 people. You know, why do they do that? Do those people actually need to know that information? No, because they're covering their bum. And so I go, well, why do they need to cover their butt? Because obviously it's not safe. They don't feel trusted. So you might espouse that and have the values on your wall, but you're not living and breathing that. And in a similar way, I had my own experience when I had a team and I kept saying to people at one point, I kept thinking, why do they keep ordering pizza in at night? And I've shared this before with other people I've spoken to, but I really was curious and I ended up going out to them one day and saying, why do you keep all eating pizza? Like, is this, you know, is there a new pizza place in town? Is there some fad? And they were like, well, no, it's late and we're hungry. And then I realized, oh, it's late and they're hungry, which means it's dinner time and actually they should be at home. And so I said, well, why are you all here? And they were like, oh, because there's a lot to get done. But then when I really thought about it and I went back to my office, I went, they're here because I'm here. And I'd never painted the expectation that I expected them to work silly hours. But for me, I was working those hours. And so I was modeling that behavior for them. And so often it's unspoken, unwritten ground rules. I was setting an unspoken ground rule. And so from that day, I went, I will always leave by 6, you know, and I didn't say that publicly. I just did that myself. If I needed to do emails, I'd do them at home or in my commute. And then I would save them and I wouldn't send them till the next day. And you know what? The pizza stopped because people went, you know what? Now we've got permission to go home. Mm. So even though I had no expectation of that, there was an unspoken ground rule. And so that's an area of safety. We need to lean into where are those areas where people don't feel safe to behave or to speak up or to be a certain way. And so to do that is ownership, accountability, responsibility. You know, I had to own that I was creating part of that problem. I took responsibility and went, what else can I do? So that's what I mean when I say psychologically safe. When people feel really safe that I can disagree with my boss, I can say in a meeting that I don't think this is a good way to go and here's why, and they feel like I'll be heard and listened to and not put down for that, or I'm not going to be blamed if something goes wrong, that's when you get safety. And then your organization can absolutely thrive because people will come to work and deliver their whole self. So we need to be doing more of that. And it's hard, right? It's hard work every day because we all want to avoid the difficult conversations. You know, anything that brings up some discomfort, we often, our natural is to run away from it. So we've got to start learning to push those boundaries.
And it takes awareness, first of all. You know, I think it was interesting that you tell the story of a moment of awakening and of awareness, you know, every day the pizza, and it's like, what is this, the pizza thing? And you hadn't made the link between pizza and expectations and standards and unspoken rules. And I think that is a sign of that's what we need to cultivate in our leaders, that curiosity, that awareness, that power of observation that helps helps leaders read what's going on. Otherwise, you just become immune to it. Once you become aware of the water that you're swimming in as a fish, then you can go, oh, it's a little bit cloudy. You know, I didn't realize we're actually in water. And there's a way to have it be more clear.
Great point. So, and curiosity, I agree. And I think the best way to go to curiosity is to ask questions. Questions are the answer because our brain can't help but answer a question. You know, we don't like the gap between a question being asked and the silence. We always want to answer. So, you know, if we observe and see something, even if we don't quite have awareness of what is causing that, asking questions and inquiring is what starts to lead us to the answer. And the challenge is that without us feeling safe and like we have a bit of a circle of safety, we're not going to ask the questions because we're afraid to. So we need to build trust first. And once we have trust, then we can go from there.
So people talk a lot about building trust. Like when you're having discussions with teams about building trust, where do you start with them? Like let's say you've got a dysfunctional team, there is no trust, like people are scared to speak up. What's the first step in building trust?
Yeah, great. And I'm sorry, I can hear my neighbor's dog barking now.
It's a whole lava of dogs.
I can't lock him away. So I'm sorry. So with a team that's dysfunctional or got some challenges, and I know I've worked with many of them, and you can usually, as an outsider, I can walk in when we're going to do a culture audit and you can pick up the vibe in a few minutes and can start to go, ooh, there's something going on here. To start building trust, again, it comes back to conversations and it comes back to humanness. And I actually think, and it's actually why we developed the cards for uniqueness and why I have that box of question cards, is to start people just going, you know, well, where did you come from? Or what number child were you in your family? What was an experience you had in your teens that has shaped who you are now? What are some of your aspirations for the future? You know, what did you want to be when you grew up? And it could be as simple as, I remember a team I had once that were quite dysfunctional, and so I just started with questions around, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? And simple things like that you think sound like nothing, but they can be the launch pad of conversations where people get to know each other deeper. And, you know, starting with conversations and just actually getting to know who's the human that's sitting here in the room with me, as opposed to that's Bill from accounts. Actually starting to appreciate where they're coming from. And then you start to go, oh, maybe that's why they're such a control freak, because you can start to hear that in their history. Because really, our unique power is kind of the sum of three different things. It's the sum of our history. It includes our values and what's important to us and what are the things that we won't compromise on. And it involves our purpose and why we believe we're here or what we're here to contribute. And so the more we can have conversations to tease out people's history and their values and their purpose, the more we can actually start to connect with them. And that's what builds trust. Trust is not built in one act. Trust is built in the tiny little things over a long period of time. And I love hearing Brené Brown speak about this once, And she said she remembered a leader or a manager she was working with that was struggling with a difficult team, you know, that weren't connected. And one of the staff members' husbands had passed away, and he actually went to the funeral. And I think Brené maybe had been the encourager for him to do that. And he went to this woman's husband's funeral, and from that moment started to be able to build trust, because she and the staff saw that as, I see you as a human and that you have this life outside of work, you know, and I'm going to show my respect. And that's what started to build the trust. And so I think that's what it is. It's being vulnerable. It's showing up. It's being human. It's being real. That's how we start to chip away into those cultures that are experiencing toxic, because what brings us together is always, there's always more than what sets us apart, but we often focus on those gaps or the challenges or the dysfunction, and we don't go, okay, little human, I'm a little human too, and what do we have in common? So questions, I think, is the beginning. Understanding each other's work style and what makes you tick and why you think and behave in certain ways. So, you know, are you a big picture person? Are you detailed? Do you enjoy lots of chatter and banter in the office, or do you like silence? You know, are you methodical, a plotter, you know, that likes to have their day mapped out? Are you a person who likes excitement? So, you know, understanding some of that about each other can help us build a more cohesive culture. Because it's always the way that the person that likes complete silence and has their earbuds in, you know, gets plonked next to sitting next to someone who's a meerkat, who's a chatterbox, who wants to involve themselves in everyone's conversation. And suddenly we've got a bullying and harassment case on our hands or something like that. And it's just that there's not an awareness to have the appreciation of different styles.
Yeah.
So, and that's a conversation. So it all comes back to having a conversation. Yeah. So
tell me about your conversation cards. Do you sell these cards? What? Tell me about the question cards that you've got.
Yeah, so we do sell them in our shop, and we use them ourselves in workshops that we use. Uh-huh. And they're just 52 cards. We say they're cards for uniqueness against the ordinary. And they range from deep questions, so what's your why or your purpose in the world, to lighthearted questions like, are you a morning, an afternoon, or an evening person? Or what's a meal you like to cook from scratch? So they're all varied, and that's to make them non-threatening. Mm-hmm. And there's 52 because there's 52 weeks in the year. So we figure if teams want to draw a card each week, they've got a whole year's worth of team meeting fodder there. So you could simply just start one team meeting by pulling a card.
Yeah.
And asking that question of everyone in the room. And the answers reveal so much about who they are and what's important to them. That's so awesome. We get to know each other.
So where can people get these cards? What's the URL for them?
Oh, sure. So they can buy them on our website, which is www.uqpower.com.au/cards. So, okay. Yeah, uqpower.com.au/cards.
Great.
Yeah, and they're lots of fun. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'll also have that as a resource on my podcast page, which is zoeralph.com/podcast/Heidi.
Awesome.
So if you're listening, you can either go to my page or Heidi's page. Otherwise, whichever way, you'll get access to the cards, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So this idea of being unique, I think this is a tension that we have, like, let's stand up and be unique, and yet let's be part of the tribe. How do you help people balance that? Like, is there a point where you're too much unique and then you can't fit into the tribe and you have to leave? Or tell me some of your experiences around fitting in and standing out.
Yeah, great question. And I think that comes back to our EQ and our ability to read others in the room and be present and aware. And I know there's been times where my uniqueness has actually played against me. And I'm remembering one board meeting in particular where I met a new board of directors for a company, and it was Melbourne Cup Day, which is a big horse racing day here in Australia. And they say it's the race that stops a nation. Unfortunately, it didn't stop this board, and they still held their board meeting on the day of it. And so I wore a big, beautiful race day hat to the meeting. Because I love accessories.
Are you
part
a Melbourne
of my
girl?
Unique. Sorry?
Are you a Melbourne girl?
No.
Oh, you're not even based in Melbourne where the horse race is.
No, okay. But we have events on all around the country that honour it. And one of my things is all about accessories and opulence. So I call myself an opulent minimalist. So I might only have a few things now, but they're all very nice things. And so I had an opulent hat on, and it literally stopped the meeting, and the gentleman around the table just couldn't get to the agenda and were distracted, and then started talking about horse racing, and it just like threw out 40 minutes of the meeting, and I ended up having to take it off and put it on the floor under the table because it was such a distraction, clearly, and I needed to present a business case at that board meeting. And it wasn't until maybe a month later, I was at a function one night, and one of those board members saw me, and I went over and said hello to him, and he was like, "Oh, you're the hat lady." And I went, "Oh, damn," right? So he'd remembered nothing probably of my professional expertise and what I presented. He just remembered I was the hat lady. And so I realized at that point that my uniqueness probably hadn't supported me so well. So I do think, you know, there are times and places for it. And there are ways to subtly be in your own strengths and be yourself. And, you know, I do think, why fit in when you were born to stand out? I do believe that, you know, but not everyone has perhaps the confidence, courage, or the positional power they feel to always do that. But there's always a way to bring about and thread your uniqueness through. So if you're creative, there's creative ways of looking at planning. There's creative ways of running a meeting. You know, you can bring that little piece of your uniqueness into perhaps the way you do something that fits in with the norm still. And I do think what makes us unique makes us stand out, and that's what makes us money. It's what makes us memorable. It's what makes those that are meant to be in our tribe get drawn to us. And so the more we sit in bland land, the more we're all just sitting in this sea of sameness. And, you know, that kind of makes life pretty ordinary rather than having the excitement and maybe the disappointments as well. But that's a life well lived to me. That you have light and shade. We've all got dark sides and darkness, and we've all got brightness. So for me, I'm like, you know, I'm one of those people that wants to, when I'm 120 and I die, I want them to be able to say she used up all her juice, like it was all gone. you know, I don't want to have been the safe old lady that kind of just eased on down the road. So, you know, that's my personal choice. But I do think there's ways for people to weave their uniqueness into what they do, whether that's, you know, their pocket square hanky that they always have, whether that's I always wear my grandma's pearls, whether that's I, you know, eat certain food or I talk about certain things. It's still who we are.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's a balance. Like on one end you have bland, beige, blancmange. And on the other end, you have flamboyant, you know, and I think all shy people going, I am so not going to flamboyant. And then what you're talking about is that there's gradients of that. You can probably be between bland and flamboyant and be unique. You don't need to be flashy. You can actually show up as you are with all of your strengths blooming without being a show pony.
Yeah, and I know I've got some friends who are totally unique, but they're by no means extrovert, you know, out there people. Mm. And it's the subtle conversations they have. It's the kind words that maybe they do. You know, I've got a friend who does handmade cards, and there's this soft, nice gesture. And it's the fact that she's is very much a touchy-feely person. And so she functions in society just fine. You would meet her and think she's lovely, but when you get something like that from her, you go, oh, you know, and you feel her compassionate heart. And so that's just weaved through her life. It doesn't mean that you've got to be out there being the brightest, boldest. It's about just being real and being you.
Thank you. I think that's a good hope for most people listening to this, you know, about shining bright, but in your own way. So I've got two questions about you as a business operator. Both of us run our own practices and have the joys and challenges of that. How do you stay centered through running your own business and standing on your own? You know, because you talked about this at the beginning, about leaving the comfort of a big big organization with its own brand, its own kudos, and then, you know, shouting out with brand Heidi and being on your own. How do you work about being centered through all of that?
Yeah, cool. In the beginning, not well, I have to say. I ran around like a mad chick with my head cut off in the beginning. And I went from having a large six-figure salary to, I think, in my first year of business, making only about $30,000. Oh. So it was quite confronting and made me feel like a failure, right? And I did a lot of running and a lot of busyness that actually wasn't really stuff that was going to make things happen. It was just a lot of busyness, a lot of running. And so it's taken me a while. It's been a path. And certainly there have been a lot of really great books on the way, along the way. I write myself a letter every year, and I've been doing it for about 12 or 13 years now. So I write an annual gratitude letter, and it's as if my year has already happened. Mm. So I write it as if it's the 31st of the end of that year. And I reflect on what I have achieved or what I'm grateful for in that year. And so that helps keep me centered, because whenever I'm a bit, oh, where am I going? What am I doing? I come back and read that letter. Mm. And that really helps me, because in that has my values, my purpose, my history, what's important to me. And I also play with my dogs and everyone heard them earlier. Thank you for their starring role. They certainly are unique. And so I love walking in nature with them, and I am fortunate to live in an area where there is lots of bushland. There's also a lake, and there's also beaches and oceans. So I every day take them somewhere different and we go and be in nature. I love yoga and breathing for its groundedness. And when I did leave corporate, I was quite in a burnt out space and didn't quite realize how it had affected me, but I had adrenal fatigue, no female hormones, really had burnt myself out. Mm-hmm. And so I've still been working on that for years, on getting back to that wholeness. So I run some days, and I find running actually quite mind expanding, and I listen to podcasts or sometimes just silence. But I love the breathing and the yoga to bring me back home to self. And I always thought I couldn't meditate because of my busy mind, until I discovered that a busy mind is actually one of the best meditation tools you can have, and that it's about focus, not about emptying. And so I run a meditation circle at my place every Sunday, and have a beautiful circle of women and children and people that just come and go as suits them. So every Sunday I do that and just open my doors and whoever comes, comes. And I find that such a beautiful way to set me up for the week ahead. And if you look at any of the native cultures around our world, Indigenous cultures, they always had women's circles or some kind of circles or around the campfire, whatever that was. And the energy that you get from that, and we simply just do a meditation together, then we have a cup of tea, talk about, you know, our goals for the week or whatever, and go home. But that really fills up my cup. And I've been doing that nonstop for about 2 years now. And I think only a couple of times where I've been overseas, I've made sure the keys are left out and they still come and do their meditation. So that I really find beautiful. And that's having that circle of people around you who want nothing better than for you to be happy and whole. Mm. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love that. And, you know, walking in nature is one of my key tenets as well, and yoga also, and running and meditation. I swear to God, you are my soul sister.
I'd love to see your bookshelf, because books are my other big thing. So I'm sure we've probably got a whole heap.
Probably the same. We've read a lot of the same stuff, I'm sure. That would be a really cool thing to do, actually. Can you do that? Can you take a snapshot of your bookshelf, and I'll take a picture of mine, and we'll swap them?
I will. I have five. So, and that's one of my things, is in my downsizing, I haven't yet done the books, but I am going to do a giveaway thing to my community. So cool. That's great. That's yet to come.
All right. One final question. So in my work around boundless leadership, which is about leadership beyond borders, you know, looking at the things that constrain us, like you do, you know, about this lack of confidence and not stepping into your own self, I'm interested in exploring how people stay centered, which we've just spoken about, and also exploring their growth edge. And I think it's important to be centered before you explore what's next and what's in the future and what's possible. So where are you up to? Where is your growth edge and what are you growing towards and into?
Oh, I love that. That might be for my next deck of cards. Where's your growth edge? So I probably had quite a controlled upbringing in earlier years of my life, and I had some really challenging life experiences that could have spun me out of control, but actually saw me get probably more rigid and need to control what was going on. I guess now in my life I'm finding surrender is actually my growth edge, and learning to let go and to truly just allow and let good. As I said, I write my gratitude letter every year, and I always read one book right before I write that to kind of set me in the right mindset. And I just randomly select that book. And I recently, for the last year's one, I read The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer. And that book is all about a man who lived his life just surrendering to the universe and going, okay, you know, show me whatever else comes up. And he just lived that way. And he built a cabin in the woods, you know, and just surrendered to what came up. And so I've been pushing into that edge. I've been leaning into the edge of not needing to know all the answers and not needing to control. Mm. And so my fascination now as an opulent minimalist is I'm stretching myself from having I'm a property investor because I love property, but instead of having a fixed address myself and a home, I'm looking at, you know, well, what if home was just me? What if I have everything I need and it's not about the stuff? And so I'm, you know, progressing at the moment to moving and building a tiny house on wheels so that I can actually move around. And what I'm hoping to do is spend a year or so just traveling, and wherever I end up, you know, I'll park and stay for a while and get a feel for that community. And I just want to see, can I live and can I function, and what kind of growth will I get personally out of letting go of my attachment to stuff and living in a home that's 2.5 meters by 5 meters, and that's everything I have. Because I do really believe that, you know, we use our power to touch the lives of others, and that our life is all about, it's what's inside that counts. And so for me, that's an expression of that. It's leaning into the discomfort of not coming home to the same home every day and the same streets and knowing my community. And my parents, who are just beautiful souls, also have very controlled, contained lives. And so I've observed as they've gotten quite old, so they're in their late 70s, but they're getting quite elderly, their circle of friends has shrunk as people have passed away and those sorts of things. And their view of the world and their self-expression has shrunk with it. And so I'm curious about, can I push my boundaries? Can I expand myself? Can I become more limitless if actually I remove the boundaries of a home, of a town, of a place that I associate my identity with? That's my growth edge. I have no idea what it'll be like, and I'm sure there'll be challenges, and I'm sure there'll also be amazing opportunities to meet people and try new things. Yeah.
That's very cool. So have you got a launch date on this?
I hope to be, my builder and I have been working together. He's actually been doing some renovations at my fixed abode, my actual house, so that I can rent it and leave it. We've done plans for the tiny house, and it'll take probably 5 or 6 months to build. So I'm hoping by the new year I'll be in it and ready to leave.
Wow, that is so exciting. That makes me nervous and excited all at the same time.
Oh yeah, a little bit of vomit comes up in your throat. That's how you know you're at the edge.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
but exciting
vomit test. I love that.
That's it.
I'll include that in what I'm talking about. At the edge, you know, is, have you got a bit of spew?
Yeah. Cool. That's when you know you're there.
Well, on that note of vomit, Heidi, thank you so much. It's been a delight. You were absolutely lyrical and fabulous in the energy that you show up with. And I am deeply grateful for having you on the show. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Zoe. And thank you for your thoughtful questions, which I have jotted a couple of them down and know that if you see them show up in one of my future question cards, that they were inspired by you. But thank you for valuing my input and for valuing our time together today.
Pleasure.